Hello and welcome to Next 2.0 on WQLN NPR. I am your host, Marcus Atkinson. Next is produced by the Public Voice Media. If you want to know more about Next 2.0, go to Facebook and like the page. Follow us on Instagram at Next 2.0 Erie. There you can keep up with upcoming show promos, events, and clips about what's next for our communities and our democracy. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to have to handle this one as a multi-part series because today we're talking about college. And not necessarily the educational aspect of college. We're talking about the fact that numbers are down. We're also talking about how the loan forgiveness program is at issue right now. And also, if you had a student loan that was halted for a while, I'm sure you've noticed, it is no longer at a freeze. People are paying that bill again, and people are feeling the effects of paying that bill again. And the overarching question today is this: is it still worth it? Is the juice worth the squeeze, if you will? That's the question of the day today. With the help of Isabel Spires, aka Izzy, our lovely intern, we interviewed several college students at a local campus, and we asked them what their thoughts were about the price of college, whether it is worth the cost of admission anymore, what they can do about the student loans that are just crushing the average American that has taken that debt on, whether they finished or not. And they had some very interesting opinions, but let me play you one small clip that I think defines how far too many people feel today.
Yeah, I think it's very evident that college is becoming too expensive and that return on investment is dwindling just because of the sheer cost of tuition.
This from a young man who hasn't even gotten his college degree yet. But do you need a college degree to understand that Houston, we have a problem? As a matter of fact, Houston, we have a very big problem. The cost is just getting out of control. It's been out of control for a while. So how has that impacted the average consumer? Let's go to the numbers. BestCollege.com, August of 2023. U.S. college enrollment declined, facts and figures. College enrollment has been declining steadily since 2010. In the past decade, total college enrollment has dropped by about 1.95 million students, or by 10%. The undergraduate college enrollment decline has accelerated since the pandemic began, resulting in a loss of nearly 1.4 million students, or almost 9% of total enrollment between spring of 2019 and the spring of 2023. Financial concerns stemming from COVID-19 caused many would-be students to change their plans. And so COVID has been a theme of some of our recent shows, the last one in particular, and that's playing a huge role here. It says between 1985 and 2010, college enrollment increased at an average rate of 2.2% a year. But from 2011 to 2021, it decreased at an average rate of 1.6%. And in 2021, it was down 14.6%. from peak enrollment in 2010. Go back to Houston. We have definitely a problem. But what are the students saying? Let's go back to a couple of these clips. We're asking these students, why do you believe people are making the conscious decision to not go to college? Why do you believe that enrollment is down? Here's what they had to say.
I think less people are going to college now just because I don't think they understand. It's not explained to us a lot about the financial situation and how hard it would be to find the money for tuition and how to go about getting that money for tuition. So I think that has a lot to do with it.
Well, I think the rising tuition costs, rising tuition costs due to more administrative costs, plus a lot of, people in our generation realize that for some majors it's not worth it.
I'd definitely say financial trouble. And I feel like, personally, I was told growing up, and I watched my older brother and older cousins growing up, we all were told we had to go to college. But even recently, kids younger than me and my age, I feel like it's socially a lot more acceptable to not go to college now. Not everywhere for sure. I know a lot of people around me still, especially adults, press for college. But I was fortunate to grow up around, in my older years of high school, people that told me I don't have to go. Once I started expressing that, I don't think it's the only path to success. I don't think even for me, I don't even know that it was the smartest decision to go to college. So I think a lot of people are realizing you can be successful without college.
All right, hold it right there. Stop. Let me introduce one more element for you to think about. Building trades. Things that people can do with their hands and not necessarily outsource to AI or over to other countries. How's that faring right now? Let me read you a small stat from thehetchingreport.org. This is from April of 2023. It says mechanic and repair trade programs saw an enrollment increase of 11.5% from the spring of 2021 to 2022. Enrollment in construction trade courses increased by 19.3%, and culinary program enrollment increased by 12.7%. This is all according to the Clearinghouse. Did this commentary come up from the students? Well, actually, yes, it did. They didn't give specific stats and figures, but this was their best guess or their gut reaction to the idea of trade school versus college. Check this out.
So I guess the availability of information, I feel like is really driving this, and the change in expectation that you need to go right to college. A lot of, you know, school guidance programs are now really opening that up and not pushing as college as, you know, the only option. And I think in reality, a lot of schools are really moving towards, you know, trades as a viable option instead of college.
In my personal opinion, I think that there's more opportunities going to the workforce now than there is in college, just like from a salary standpoint and benefits overall. It's not, I really don't think it's worth it to go to college now for 4 years to make $40,000 a year versus like my brother who went to construction right out of high school and is making probably double that right now and has full benefits and he's not even 20.
There it is. The difference between building trades and a quote unquote professional or white collar career that you've gone and acquired a 4, 6, or 8 year degree for. I remember relatives telling me when I was younger, for all of us in our family for that matter, there weren't a ton of us that went to college and got a 4 year degree per se. I do. But they would always talk about there are things that someone is always going to have to physically do. And even today in 2023, somebody has to cut your hair. Somebody has to style your hair. If you're a woman, someone, not necessarily just a woman, if you get your nails done, let me just say it like that. Someone has to actually do that work for you. Landscaping. Somebody's got to fix the plumbing. Somebody's got to do the construction. Somebody has to build the building, fix the concrete, pour the concrete. The list goes on. These things, for the most part, cannot be outsourced. These things, for the most part, cannot be replaced by AI. And as technologically advanced as we are as a society, the need for those trades continues. They touched on that, and I think that makes a lot of sense. A lot of this discussion today, and again, this is a first part of a multi-part series because there's so many layers to this discussion that I feel like it needs to be attacked in these different compartments. But there are so many people that have pushed and pushed and pushed college for the sake of pushing college that people are really questioning the notion, is that a wise choice given your personal preferences and your personal circumstances? Are we pushing kids towards college because it makes us look better as parents? I know it feels fly to put on the parent of a such and such student on the back of the car. I know it makes our egos and our self-esteem shoot through the roof when we come in with that sweatshirt on and my child attends X school, especially if it's a school with a name and a huge price tag to match. But this next clip, she makes a point that I think, being someone who works with young people all the time, I do a lot of volunteering for students I have for a lot of years, everywhere from kindergarten all the way up through high school. And what this next student says has been reflected in the commentary of a lot of young people for several years now. And I have to tell you, I was one of those people that was like, that's kind of fantasy thought. As time goes on, the viability of the internet and things surrounding the internet has proven itself legitimate in terms of trying to make a living on various scales. Listen to what this young lady had to say.
I think it's the fact that the internet has blown up so much. So the fact that influencers and being an influencer can give you a sustainable life and so much more. And that, like, you can make so much money off of just doing something that you love doing. So, like, if you love playing video games, you can post a YouTube video and make thousands of dollars off of it. So I think that's why the number keeps decreasing.
See, this is exactly why I said you have to attack this topic in layers and on levels, because she makes a very compelling point. I know that if you're old fashioned or you aren't the product of what you see around you technologically, it's easy to dismiss what you see. I remember someone saying to me once about pro athletes, whether they are catching a ball, hitting a ball, swinging a stick, twirling around, whatever their particular profession or sport is, this person said they are making way too much money just to play a game and it isn't fair. I said, if you do anything that draws a large crowd in this day and age, you will make top dollar for it. If you go into a community park and paint a painting and 10,000 people line up every single time you break that easel out, it will only take a few seconds for some sponsor or sponsors to say, hey, can you use my canvas when you do that? I'll pay you X. Can you use my brushes when you do that? I'll pay you Y. As a matter of fact, can you wear this jacket while you're doing that? I'll pay you Z. They want your audience. And if you can draw an audience, you can get paid legitimate coin for whatever. We're watching the rise of the NIL deal in college. Love it or hate it. I particularly love it, but that's another show. And when kids have a strong following on social media, sponsors now have the option of saying, I want in on that following. And these kids aren't always the stars of the team. 2,000 or 220,000 followers, I want in. 2 million followers, I definitely want in. We've seen the rise of the X Games. It's no longer just a matter of the core sports. Why? Because these people are drawing a viewership. They have an audience. And the people that pay the bills want the audience, i.e. ratings when it comes to media. So the point that she's making is compelling. And this isn't lost on young people. They are starting to make the connection of, if I can get enough people to pay attention to what I do, and the what I do part is what gets tricky, because the what I do part is sometimes very negative, very self-exploitative. But if somebody can pay attention to what I do in large enough numbers, a check will follow. Now, on some degree, you need a stronger plan than that. But at its heart, at a base level, there's actually some truth to that in this day and age. She makes that point, and I think it's something for us to all consider. But now I'll transition into just the overall cost and people being stuck with that bill, because if you've been paying that bill for however many years, you notice that not too long ago, it was frozen. It was a 3-year hiatus for student loan payments, but the freeze came to an end. It started in September 2020. COVID made it very difficult for people, and so the government said, let's slow down and let people breathe. That pause felt real good to the average American. But here we are now. As of October, the bills have started coming due again. And when you read some of these heartbreaking articles, you got some people whose student loan payments are larger than their car notes. Some of these student loan payments rival mortgage payments, rental payments. And so people are starting to tighten their belts again so that they can get back into the rhythm of getting this bill off of their backs. Now, this next generation is cheering hard. Take your political sensibilities out of it. Whether you love or hate Biden, they're cheering for this loan forgiveness program. They want debt relief. They are challenging the system and saying, how is this cool? that you charge top dollar for an education. How is that even an option if we want to be the lead sled dog on this planet when it comes to technology and leading the world into the next century? It makes no sense. Before I go too much into the debt relief numbers, let me give you some more statements from the students about options that could and should be explored, and you'll start to get a sense of how they feel about the prospect of loan forgiveness. Here are the kids again.
That's a really good question. I mean, personally, I do use loans also. So as far as alternatives go, I'm not really sure what's out there because, I mean, I'm a freshman, so I haven't really explored that yet. But I think just keeping us informed on, like, how to pay off those loans, because I know, like, a lot of people who drop out of college, too, they still have to deal with that debt, and it's a lot harder for them to make it back up.
Well, a main thing, I guess, is students keep on choosing colleges that are very expensive in the over $50,000 range. So I guess subsidizing lower cost schools such as community colleges and public universities would be a way to avoid most of this debt, which would drive down the market price for the higher end schools.
And so, like, avenues that could be explored, obviously student debt forgiveness is an option. You know, deferred payment programs have certainly, you know, kind of gone up in popularity, as I've seen. I mean, I'm no expert on this, but, you know, so I think there are avenues that can be taken. And I think it really should start with the borrowers kind of making their voices heard more against these almost predatory lending practices by student loan lenders. I think that's a really big problem that we face right now. So
I knew somebody was going to use the P word, predatory, and he went there, did not disappoint me. Hey, listen, if you can use that word when it comes to car loans and home loans, you certainly can introduce that mindset into this discussion, because that's the whole catalyst of our conversation today. Is the price tag way too exorbitant for what you get in return? So I knew he was going to use that word. I want to go to an article that was just dropped, and we're going to start coasting towards the finish line, because for this part one, I really want to just tease the audience so that you can say, yeah, we need to talk about this, because we do. And there'll be a part 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 of this, because a lot of the things that are mentioned here deserve their own segments. But I wanted to put this teaser out because there's so much conversation surrounding it. And I'm like, well, how do we touch on this without unpacking the whole thing? I mean, I want you guys to listen, but I don't anticipate you wanting to sit here for 2 and 3 hours. I mean, we could, but I would imagine that my producers would have something to say about that. But in any event, we'll keep unpacking this thing as time goes on. But just a few days ago, this article hit, this announcement rather hit October 4th, which is just 4 days ago or 2 days ago from this recording. From the U.S. Department of Education, Biden-Harris administration announces an additional $9 billion in student debt relief. Again, I want you to suspend your political leanings. This is not an endorsement. I am reading a statement from the U.S. Department of Education from the sitting administration. Regardless of who's sitting there, this is the information being disseminated from the White House. I want to read some of this verbatim. Do your own research, obviously. But again, this is from the U.S. Department of Education. The Biden-Harris administration announced today that an additional 125,000 Americans have been approved for $9 billion in debt relief through fixes the U.S. Department of Education has made to income-driven repayment, IDR, and public service loan forgiveness, PSLF. And granting automatic relief for borrowers with total and permanent disabilities. Today's announcement brings the total approved debt cancellation by the Biden-Harris administration to $127 billion, with a B, dollars for nearly 3.6 million Americans. And so as quick as I can, how does that break down? That breaks down to $5.2 billion in additional debt relief for 53,000 borrowers under public service loan forgiveness programs, nearly $2.8 billion in new debt relief for nearly 51,000 borrowers through fixes to income-driven repayment plans. These, by the way, are borrowers who have been in repayment for 20 or more years but never got the relief that they were entitled to. $1.2 billion for nearly 22,000 borrowers who have a total or permanent disability and have been identified and approved for discharge through a data match with the Social Security Administration. They've also approved the following in debt cancellation: nearly $42 billion for almost 855,000 borrowers who are eligible for forgiveness through income-driven repayment by fixing historical inaccuracies in the count of payments that qualify toward forgiveness. Almost $51 billion for 715,000 public servants through public service loan forgiveness programs. $11.7 billion for almost 513,000 borrowers with a total and permanent disability, and $22.5 billion for more than 1.3 million followers who were cheated by their schools, saw their institutions precipitously close, or are covered by related court settlements. I'm exhausted from just reading, but I got to tell you, people are over it. People are tired. People are exhausted about the over-exorbitant costs of post-secondary education. People are scratching their heads about the quality of secondary education leading up to this. As college students or college graduates, people are wondering, how is it that I put my best foot forward? I want to go get educated. I want to become an asset to society. I want to contribute to the intellectual capacity of this nation, and yet the bill feels punitive. Like, am I being docked for trying to be better? Am I being docked for trying to add to the economy? And then when you take the students that we verbally say, this is it, this is the ticket, and we show them what this thing looks like, we show them the numbers and the data, how are they supposed to be encouraged to take the next step and go get a formal post-secondary education? The last clip that I'll play for you is something that I think not just the students, but I think people are saying this at their dinner tables and at the water cooler and at the bar over a beer. Because when it's all said and done, it just doesn't make any sense. I'll let one of our students have the last word.
I think they need a better financer because there's a lot of money going elsewhere that we kind of don't know that where it's going. And if they are pushing so hard for an higher education, then they should put more money towards it so that students are able to afford it and not have to take out like private loans or even like government loans. There should be more grants.
You said it, young lady. Go ahead. That's it for our show today. Tune in next time for more discussion and analysis with local and national guests. Remember that Next 2.0 streams on Fridays on all major podcast platforms and on the fourth Sunday of the month at 4 p.m. on WQLN NPR, which is 91.3 FM. For WQLN NPR and the Public's Voice Media, I am your host, Marcus Atkinson. Come and join us again so that you can hear about who's next and what's next for not just your community, but for our entire nation. Take care. Peace.